Sandy started, cocking her head toward the approaching figure. "Elodius Mintus," finished Fallen. "Yes, I believe it is. It has to be. He still has that mole above his left eye." Elodius, an old classmate who'd always been interested in Kaylee, stopped in front of them, releasing a huge sigh. "Good God, Stars, man," he said, grabbing Valen's hand from the table and clasping it in his own. "I'm so happy you are home. I thought I'd never see you again." He playfully swung two fists at Valen's shoulder. "You gave those Zen Terrans a good pummeling, didn't you, Cortaz?" Andy wanted to cringe at his bad joke, but she resisted as his eyes drifted to her. "And who do we have here? Already getting the girls, am I right?" Andy wanted to laugh, not at his second attempt at a joke, but because he tried to wink at her and ended up failing, scrunching his entire face instead. Andy cocked her head. "What, you don't remember me? I thought for certain you would, since you always asked me to pass your disturbingly intimate love poems to Kaylee." She felt immense pleasure as his smile dropped. Even his carefully coiled red hair seemed to go limp on his forehead. "Elodius, you remember Androma Rosella?" Fallen offered. Elodius opened his mouth as if he was going to say something, but then thought better of it. Fallen and Andy watched as he started to retreat into the growing crowd of people. "I have to, there's someone..." "Oh, look at the time," he squeaked, giving them a little wave before turning on his heel and nearly tripping as he disappeared into the crowd. "Well then," Fallen breathed, "that certainly improved my mood." For the next little while, he smiled as old friends and those intent on becoming new ones greeted him. The look on his face was genuine. Andy watched him closely, surprised to see that he'd fallen easily into the role he had to play. Valen the Resurrected, returned home from the horrors he'd faced, yet still with all the poise of a general's son. But his expression changed when the announcer appeared on stage and called for the official start of the ball. "This is it," Fallen said, turning to Andy. On stage, General Cortaz's face twitched as Fallen and Andy stood together and swept onto the now-empty dance floor. A few gasps broke out, then whispers, trickling throughout the room like bugs. Fallen's palms shook as he placed a hand on her waist and grasped her left hand with the other. "Relax," Andy whispered. "Let's give them something to talk about." She flashed him a wicked grin as the music began. And as Valen spun her into the first move of the dance, Andy saw Dex standing on the fringes of the crowd, an expression of longing clear on his face.
Chapter 79 Dex. Dex wondered why this was happening again. Either it was a very strong form of déjà vu or a cruel joke being played just for kicks. Here Dex was, dressed to make the ladies swoon, but all he could do was watch Valen and Andy waltz on the dance floor to the melodic music, wishing he could take Valen's place. He'd told himself he wasn't going to do this. That last night, after their kiss, they had said their goodbyes. He'd carefully placed his feelings into a locked box deep in the confines of his mind, then thrown away the key. But God's stars above, she was striking, her beauty every bit as deadly as her fists. He had seen her wear various types of clothing in the past, and sometimes nothing at all, but she'd never worn a smile so easily, never truly danced in the way she'd spent her life training, and tonight she was impossible to look away from. He'd thought that the time they shared last night would be enough, but now, as Valen dipped her and Andy laughed, he couldn't take it. He still wanted to be by her side, to be the one whose hands held her instead of Valen. Lucky bastard, Dex thought. He turned away, shouldering through the crowd until he found the crew. "That bad?" Lyra asked when she saw the expression on his face, the way Dex slumped into a chair and reached for a glass of bubbling liquid on the table. "Worse," Dex said. Gilly sighed wistfully.
"I can't wait until I'm in love."
"It's not love," Dex growled. "Not even close." Breck raised a brow without saying a word. He sat with them, stewing in his misery, until the song ended and General Cortas took the stage.
Chapter 80 Androma. When Andy was younger, she'd watched the Eukatoria ball on the feeds in her parents' living room. No matter which planet the ball took place on, the room on the feed always shone, as if glitter were cascading down upon the partygoers like a constant shimmering rain. She'd always turned on the hollow feature so that the flickering images of dancers filled the room. It was as if they'd been transported right from the Eukatoria ball into Andy's home. When the music played on the feed, she danced to its beat and fell into step among the glamorous patrons. Women in lush gowns danced beside her, while others twirled through the couch at her back. Partners spun atop the coffee table, then glided right through Andy as if she was simply a part of them and they of her. She'd always dreamed of attending the ball, but when it came time for the dancing to end, and the host system's leader to make his or her speech, Andy had always frowned, turned off the hollow, and found other things to occupy her time. Tonight, she wished she could do the very same. But the host of this year's Eukatoria was General Cortaz, and he wasn't just a hollow before her. He was flesh and blood as he stood on the dais at the front of the room, his golden suit blinding in the bright lights over his head. Cameras hovered beside him, catching every detail of the general's face. He looked 10 years younger tonight, as if he'd put on a second skin to hide his age. But his true self still lay beneath. "I'm going to need another drink after this speech," Breck said as Andy joined her crew at their table. "Have you seen Dex?" Andy whispered, glancing around the room. Breck shrugged her large shoulders. "He said he was going to the bar. I'm sure he's already guzzling his jealousy away." Her words trailed off as the crowd fell silent. Behind General Cortaz, the other system leaders took their places, seated on plush throne-like chairs, the colors of their respective systems woven into the fabric. "Citizens of Mirabel," the general began. His voice, usually so cold, was dripping with a charm that made Andy want to retch. "Welcome," he said, lifting his arms wide, "to the 15th annual Eukatoria Ball." The crowd cheered, ladies gently tapping their fans against their palms, joyous laughter ringing across the room like the tinkling of bells. General Cortaz grinned as he waited for silence to wash over the room again. "For 15 years, the unified systems have lived in peace. Tonight, we celebrate that unity." He gestured toward his fellow system leaders. "Let us extend a warm Arcadian welcome to the leaders of the Stuna, Tavina, and Prime systems." The crowd cheered again as the leaders behind the general stood together, hands raised in celebration. Governor Kravin of the Tavina system had hair utterly bleached of color, just like Solera, the ice planet where he lived. To the right was General Polarana of the Prime system. She was a muscular woman who looked like she could split Governor Kravin in half. Beneath her black military uniform, Andy could see constellation tattoos crisscrossing her body just like Dex's, the sign of a Tenebran guardian. Andy's eyes then fell on Alara, the most breathtaking of them all. She stood with her shoulders back, her small pointed chin held high in a stance that spoke of adherent grace. Her bald head was adorned with a glittering green crown, vines and white moonflowers woven intricately around it like delicate, living jewels. General Cortaz extended a hand in her direction. "An extra warm greeting, my friends, for our dear Queen Alara of Adhira, who has journeyed far to show her people's resilience and bravery during the aftermath of the grievous attack on her planet." She stood and gave the crowd a slight smile, one that looked empty, almost sad. She touched her forehead, an adherent sign of gratitude, before sitting back down. The general pressed a hand to his heart, sending a look of utmost honor toward Alara. Andy imagined him practicing that look before the mirror today, ensuring that he'd look the ever-concerned leader of Arcadius. He turned back to the crowd, a smooth smile on his thin lips. "Many years ago, These four systems came together and declared a shared desire for unity. Tonight we celebrate that unity. We celebrate the fact that the unified systems, though light years apart, are one system, one world spread across many. More clapping. The levitating cameras flashed as the general showed off his practiced smile. Together we remain as strong as we were on that final day of battle over a decade ago. Today we continue to keep our trading ports open, to share new knowledge between the brightest scholars of each system, and to be constant in our communications with one another. Why, just yesterday I caught my wife sending a comm to General Kraven's wife. I believe the topic of discussion was how closely they could match their gowns without too many people taking notice. The crowd erupted with polite laughter. I told you matching gowns were all the rage, Gilly muttered to Breck. Andy's skin itched from this speech. This was a waste of her time. In a few more hours, she and her crew would go free. She would take off this gown, don her bodysuit and swords, and they'd be off to take back the Marauder, piloting it towards some other mission, some distant place, far away from the shimmer and shine of Arcardius. But for now, the speech droned on, and Andy lost herself in watching the crowd instead. Some smiles were genuine, like that of an expectant mother across the room. Her hands splayed across her swollen belly as she watched General Cortaz speak of the future and an ever brighter tomorrow for the galaxy. Across the room, a group of girls clustered together, giggling silently as their parents sent them looks of disapproval. A few feet away, two handsome young Arcardian soldiers, their hair groomed back and glowing under the lights, watched the girls with open interest. Later, Andy knew they'd walk up to the girls, try to win them over with their smooth words. Hopefully, if the girls were smart, they'd shut the boys down. But they likely wouldn't. They'd dance together. They'd plan their futures, set on moving higher and higher up in society until they reached the top, just as Andy's parents had. Andy sighed and glanced over at Valin. He stood in the shadows of the stage, his mother beside him with a gloved hand on his shoulder. Maybe, in another life, Andy and Valin would have been the same. Two young Arcardians with bright futures, possibly joined together as society deemed they should be. Now Valin was staying here, and she would be gone, never to return. Their eyes met for a moment, and the new friendship between them made Andy's chest ache a little. She rolled her eyes and pretended to yawn. He smiled as if he wanted to laugh, but then something passed over his eyes, and he looked away, his jaw tight.
Valin, the general said. My son, would you join me?
Valin approached the podium with his mother in tow. They looked like the perfect family to anyone who didn't know about Valin's kidnapping, the general's devilish dealings, and the way Morella often turned a blind eye for the sake of the family's reputation. Everyone in the crowd craned their necks, eager to get an up-close look at the lost son, returned home at last. Andy watched, too, not because Valin was a spectacle, but because she knew, perhaps more than anyone, that he hated to be on display. Morella stopped short, and Valin's footsteps were the only sound in the room as he walked across the stage to join his father. General Cortaz placed a hand on Valin's shoulder. Andy noticed the flinch, almost imperceptible, but there nonetheless. For a moment, Valin looked stiff and pained, as if the darkness of Lunamare was threatening to appear in this room, in front of this crowd and all the watching eyes across Mirabel. But then he relaxed, sank into the persona of the smooth politician's son he'd been trained to be since birth.
"We are a resilient galaxy," General Cortaz said, staring into the cameras, "fully capable of coming back stronger than ever before."
He squeezed Valin's shoulder.
"My son is proof of this. Many of you know that Valin, my precious firstborn, was taken by Zen-Terran mercenaries 2 years ago."
The crowd nodded, hushed sounds of disapproval and sadness sweeping across the room. The general pressed a hand to his heart as if he was touched by their concern.
"Thanks to an Arcadian-born hired hand," he said, pointedly not looking at Andy, "he has made it back safe and sound."
The crowd roared, and the general raised his hands, his voice booming into the mic.
"Having my son back home after 2 years of imprisonment on Zantera is proof of our strength and resilience in even the most trying of times. We will not be broken. We will not bow to fear."
He held a hand out to Valin. With strange, almost broken steps, Valin moved forward. General Cortaz placed a hand on his son's cheek and smiled. Valin did not smile back.
Chapter 81 Valin. This was his moment. The crowd was loud, the cheers meant for him booming over the sound of his father's voice on the loudspeaker. As Valin looked out across the packed crowd, he saw the looks of adoration in their eyes, people pressing kerchiefs to their faces to wipe away freshly fallen tears, others clapping and waving beneath the glorious skies. He dreamed of this, people calling his name, their sights set only on him. Not because of his father, and not because of his last name. Just Valin. Standing with his sister, watching the world appreciate them. Worship them.
"For you, my son,"
his father said now. Valin nodded and plastered a false smile on his face. But it was all a lie. These cheers weren't for him. Never could be. Because nobody truly knew him. Nobody truly understood the things that Valin had been through. His father's hand felt like a flaming whip on his cheek.
"My son," the general said, the mic sending his voice out across the crowd, where it echoed back and into his ears and his brain. Valin wanted it out. He never wanted to hear that voice again.
"Welcome back to Arcadius. Welcome home."
The crowd roared louder, a wave that was cresting, ready to break on top of him. Valin had made it back to Arcadius. That much was true. But he wasn't home. He was far, far from it. Lunamir had been full of terrors, but those terrors had given way to his salvation. In the back of his mind, he heard a young woman's voice, tender and loving, yet full of power and presence, as she spoke to him. He saw golden eyes, dark hair, and a heart intent on bringing light back into the galaxy. It was time. Valin felt it, as much as he felt the tainted blood pumping in his veins, as much as he felt the separation between himself and the man who stood before him now, pressing a too-hot hand to his cheek. In Lunamir, Valin had learned of the true darkness his father harbored, a soul as black as the night, with secrets as sharp as thorns. They may have shared a lineage, but that was only half of who Valin was. The other half had taken over him, helped him to become who he had always been beneath the surface. It all began tonight. "Home," his father was saying. "Home."
"This is not my home,"
Valin said as he stared into the eyes of the man he'd once been so desperate to be loved by.
"It never will be."
Valin's hand was steady as he retrieved the blade from the inner lining of his suit pocket.
"I am Valin Solis,"
he told himself.
"Vengeance will be mine."
He smiled and drove the knife into his father's chest.
Chapter 82 Chapter 82 Androma. First, there was the silver flash of a knife. Then there was blood. Andy watched, frozen in horror as it bloomed like a crimson nebula on the general's chest. He staggered back once, twice. He reached for Valin with a trembling hand. The knife was soundless as Valin pulled it from his father's chest. General Cortaz tumbled to the stage with a sickening thump. A woman's scream pierced the air. Andy saw Morella, Valin's mother, fall at her husband's side. Then an explosion rocked the ballroom. Glass shattered as the walls were blasted open. All around her, soldiers clad in crimson began to swarm through the crowd, the symbol of Zentera painted on their armored chests. A young man screamed as he pointed them out. Then another scream came, and another, until the entire room had erupted into terror. When the first shot rang out, Andy already had an electric dagger pulled from her thigh holster, the blade sizzling with electricity, eager to protect, eager to kill.
Chapter 83 Dex Zentaran soldiers swarmed the room. One second they weren't there, and the next they were everywhere, all around the crowd, black rifles held before them like beacons of death. It was Adhira all over again. On stage, Valin still stood over his father's body, knife held in his hand, a strange, absent look on his face as on-duty Arcadian soldiers lifted their own rifles and readied themselves for battle. They'd only taken down a few enemies when Valin gripped the microphone. He turned to face the Arcadians, his hand raised in a lazy gesture. Stop! The soldiers froze, accepting the command immediately. Their limbs were unmoving, and their eyes were vacant in their slack faces. Lay down your rifles, Valin said. The Arcadian soldiers dropped their weapons. Then Dex saw the purple crackle of electricity as Andy's dagger appeared in her hands. Wait! He yelled, but she sprinted past him, heading straight for Valin.
Chapter 84 Androma Andy didn't think. She just moved as her feet carried her across the room toward Valin. Her grip tightened on the dagger as she reached the stage, leaping onto it and skidding to a stop in front of Valin, prepared to do what she had to. He spun around just in time, arm held before him with the knife still clutched in his fist. Why? Andy asked. Why would you do this? Behind Valin, six patrolmen stood frozen, still as statues, mid-stride, their weapons discarded on the floor. And yet they did not move, not even to blink. They only moved when six gunshots rang out, and they all fell to the floor in a heap. General Cortaz lay a few feet away, gasping as Morella pressed her hands to his wound, screaming for help, her voice ragged as all around the room soldiers from Zentera fired their guns. Andy watched as a woman dropped, her head hitting the floor with a sickening thump, her arms splayed out against the swirling floor, limp. Andy couldn't see her crew, could barely see anything in the chaos. Androma, Valin said. She whirled back to him. The knife in his hand shone red with blood all the way to the handle. Time froze around the two of them. I had to do it, he said. She could barely hear him above the screams, what could only be bullets flying from the guns, striking partygoers and shattering glass. Morella was still screaming as Zentaran soldiers angled guns at the other system leaders, who sat stunned in their seats, arms raised in surrender. He's still alive, Valin said. A smear of blood was trailing from the general as he gasped and tried to crawl away. Valin sighed. I have to finish the job. He turned, twirling the knife so that he held the blade like a paintbrush, ready to render death upon his own father. Andy slid past him and stood in his way. Valin, stop! Whatever the reason, this was wrong. This wasn't Valin standing before her, not the sensitive boy she'd known, nor the sad, broken man she'd found in Lunamare. This was a killer. Cold and heartless. This was someone like her. Valin's jaw twitched. Move. Andy remained in position. You don't have to do this, she said, her heart hammering. She frowned at him. What did they do to you in Lunamare? What did they say? the truth. He closed his eyes, rolled his neck from side to side, a small frown on his lips. When he opened his eyes, they were full of an evil she never would have believed him capable of harboring.
"Please, Valin," Auntie said, "you don't have to do this."
"You're wrong, Androma," Valin said. His eyes fell on the dying man between them. "It's all I've ever had to do."
"I'll stop you," she whispered.
"No." He tightened his grip on the knife and stepped forward. "You won't."
Chapter 85 Dex. Sparks flew as steel clashed against steel. Andy and Valin were a blur as they fought on stage, too far away for Dex to jump in. The crowd roared around him, people sprinting and bodies falling, their extravagant clothing tripping them up as they tried to escape the chaos. The Zentaran soldiers shot heartlessly, their bullets striking down everyone in their path. It was Adhira all over again, despite what the general had said, despite Arcardius's so-called invulnerability. Now General Cortas was dying by the hand of his own son. Valin the weak, Valin the painter, Valin the murderer. It didn't add up. A man screamed as a soldier began raining bullets in his path. The weaponry was older, outdated, and yet the ammunition was not. Dex saw the moment the man was shot. He watched, horrified, as a silvery substance splattered against the man's forehead where the bullet had gone in. The liquid shimmered and sank beneath his skin, like water into a drain. The man crumpled to the ground, where he lay face up, staring up at the sky. "Move," Dex told himself. "Get the hell out of here." He could see the exit, a perfectly straight path to freedom, with only a few bodies in his way. But he couldn't leave Andy behind. Then he heard her scream. It was a sound he knew like the beat of his own heart, like the roaring of the blood in his ears. He whirled around, his vision tunneling to focus on her. Andy was down on one knee before Valin, blood dripped from her collarbone, seeping from a deep wound. Andy's knife was on the ground between them, the electricity crackling a single time before it winked out. She grabbed it and shook it once, like the snap of a whip. The electricity fired back up, swimming across the sharpest edge. Dex was close enough now to hear her voice. The shots were fewer, lessening to the point that he knew they had no time, that in seconds he would probably be next, but he couldn't look away. When she stood, somehow hauling herself up on shaky feet, Dex knew that Valin would die, because it was not Andy who rose, but someone else in her place, the bloody Baroness.
Chapter 86 Androma. Andy fought like Valin was her past come back to haunt her, and with every swing of her blade she saw the chance to erase him. But he was too quick, too skilled, too other. Not the Valin she'd grown up with, not the Valin she'd rescued. Lies, betrayal. Take him down, Androma, take him down. It was not her voice, but Kaylee's, that called to her mind. She advanced on him with fire in her heart, pain lancing through her veins like a poison. The shaky friendship they'd built was gone. She wasn't even sure if it was ever real.
"Kaylee wouldn't have wanted this," Andy screamed. "She wouldn't have..."
Her words trailed off as she saw a flash of blue in the crowd. Lyra rushing toward her, Gilly and Brack just beyond. She opened her mouth to yell at them, to tell them to run. Her words were cut off by a gunshot. The horrible, heart-shredding sound of Lyra's scream as she fell face first to the floor. Another two shots, another scream, this time from Andy's own lips, Breck howling along with her as she and Gilly fell. A soldier stood behind them, rifle aimed, blue smoke trailing from its barrel like a demon's hot, hateful breath.
"You can't win this battle, Androma," Valin said. His lips were close to her ear, but his voice was far away, as distant as the safety of the stars.
When Valin dug his knife into her chest, she didn't even feel the pain. You shouldn't have gotten in the way, he said. Andy fell to her knees. She gasped, looking down to see the hilt of his knife sticking from her chest. She pulled it out, dropped it to the floor, and fell beside it into a pool of her own blood. Valin's image blurred as he walked away from the stage. The last thing Andy saw was Dex's face in the crowd. Then the darkness arrived and swallowed her whole.
Chapter 87 Dex. He was too late. For a heartbeat, Dex thought she was dead. All around him, the room was growing quieter, the screams dying down. A few more shots here, a few more there. The thump of a body hitting the floor. The click of another silver bullet sliding into a rifle's chamber. Dex reached the stage. The system leaders were huddled together in their chairs, bodies of patrolmen littering the ground around them. But Andy was the only person he had eyes for. "Hang on," Dex said to Andy. His fingers found her throat. A tiny heartbeat fluttered beneath her skin. "You just hang on." He saw his hands moving, instinctively ripping off his jacket and pressing it to her chest. He'd kill Valin for this. He'd kill him slowly, bring him back and kill him again. His breaths were ragged. She was losing too much blood. In the crowd, he saw Lyra, Gilly, and Breck among the fallen. Dex's body shook. This was a nightmare, one he couldn't wake up from. It had to be. A few partygoers still stood around silently, frozen in shock. One man huddled in the far corner of the room, arms wrapped around his chest, eyes wide. "I'm getting you out of here," Dex whispered to Andy as he wrapped his arms around her and lifted her up. "Now." He could hear the faraway rumble of a ship tearing through the skies, coming ever closer. But what was the point? These people were beyond saving now. Bodies were spread across the floor like a carpet, eyes open to stare into the darkness above, blood staining. Dex paused. With a strange sense of clarity, he took in the scene a second time. It was then that he noticed there was no blood. Well, there were a few splashes of red or green or blue from the soldiers the patrolmen had managed to stop before the Zen Terrans gained the upper hand, but other than that, the room should have been flowing in rivers of steaming colors with the deaths of these men and women from all across Mirabelle. And yet the ground, the gowns, the suits, the ties, they were all completely dry. Valin had crossed the room, walking over the bodies with his head held high like a king of criminals, a lord that delivered loss. The soldiers, now grouped together near the ballroom doors, stood at the ready before him, as if he was their leader. A shiver ran through him. "Run now, Dextro. Run before it's too late." The sound of the ship was growing closer. He could see its lights in the sky, and instinct told him it wasn't help. There would be no help tonight, not after this. He knew there had to be another way out of here. Dex had heard of secret passageways built on the leader's estates to help them escape in the event of an attack. He simply had to find one. Dex cautiously carried Andy off the far side of the stage. As he tucked himself and Andy into the shadows behind a nearby bar, all around the room, the dead began to rise.
Chapter 88 Valin. A twitch, a curl of the fingers, the clenching of a fist, the blink of freshly opened eyes. Valin watched it all happen before him, as promised. He closed his eyes, imagined the little glowing blue thread in the back of his mind. It had always been there, something he'd seen and felt since he was a child. Only after his time in Lunamere had he fully understood the meaning of it, the raw, pure power he had. He focused on the thread and pulled. The warmth of her mental presence arrived at once, just as it had when they'd landed on Adhira and he'd called upon her. Valin sighed, relief flooding into him as their minds wove together. No longer two separate threads, but a shared tapestry. Here, in this intimate space between them, was where he belonged. It was his birthright, his past and his present and his future all coming together. Everything finally made sense. She'd given him the keys to understanding, and now he was whole. "The change is happening, sister," Valen thought. He could almost feel her smile, something so rare for her. As the feeling passed through him, his own mouth quirked at the corners. They'd had so little to smile about until recently. But all the months he'd spent in Lunamere had been worth it. "For this." "Have them ready for me when I arrive," she replied. For a moment, there was silence between them, the space in his mind empty of her warmth. Then her voice came again. "You did well, brother. My faith in you was never misplaced." She was glorious. But it was more than that. She was victorious. A soldier standing on a blood-soaked battleground, watching the last of her enemies fall. Valen closed the link, the tapestry gone, the single thread all that remained. For a moment he felt cold, lifeless. Then he saw the first body stand back up, a patrolman, unmarred on the outside from the engineered bullets. Like beacons in the crowd, others stood around him. Women, children, the ones who'd turned, surely ready to join the cause, looked fresh and alert, as if waking from a restful sleep. The others, the unaffected anomalies who were immune to the substance the bullets carried. Valen knew he'd have to take care of them soon enough. Like Androma, he thought with a twinge of sadness. He'd seen that bullet hit her, but she did not fall. She was unaffected by Zenith. So many times he'd tried to compel her, only to feel a wall come up in her mind. One of the soldiers approached Valen.
"She's landing, sir."
"Good," he said. "Take care of the remaining unaffected. I don't want her to have to lay eyes on them." The soldier saluted, slapping a fist to his heart, then rushed off into the crowd as more people began to stand and wake from their stupor. The unaffected were easy to spot. There weren't many. Perhaps 10. They walked in circles, blinking, calling for their loved ones. "A shame," Valen said to no one. They would all die. He heard the ship landing, felt the vibration of the ground beneath his feet. His heart raced, and his mind whispered, "Family. Blood. Truth." The shattered glass from the doors crunched underfoot as another set of guards arrived. He turned and made his way to the stage. There was a wet, red smear where his father's body had been. Valen clenched his jaw. "Andy," he thought. Her body was gone too. "Dex," he thought right after. He couldn't see them, but he knew they hadn't escaped. Not in Andy's condition, and not with his guards blocking every exit. There were other, far more important things to attend to at the moment, however. The crowd was just beginning to brew with the sound of voices, questions. People staring at others around them, wondering what had happened, why there were soldiers guarding the doors. And yet, thanks to the bullets, they stayed mercifully calm. Valen scanned the faces again, his eyes falling on Lyra, the pilot. She stood beside Gilly, both of them staring silently. Again the tug at Valen's mind came, and he knew his sister was close. He faced the crowd, spreading his arms wide.
"Look at me!"
His voice rang out steady and true, and when they looked at him, it was everything he'd ever dreamed of. Not quite adoration, but acceptance. Valen without a shadow. Valen without the stain of his father beside him. All eyes were on him, rapt with attention as if his voice was a magnet, and they were helpless to resist its pull. Behind him, the guards brought forward the leaders from the Tavina, Prime, and Stuna systems. They stood to Valen's right, silent as night.
"The time to choose has arrived," Valen addressed the crowd. "Today, in this room, we will change the course of the future. We will turn our eyes to the one true ruler, instead of these feeble impostors."
He lifted a hand toward the system leaders of Mirabel. The room was silent, like the moment before a blade was drawn, before a bullet was loosed, before a life was taken hold of and remade. Before Valen asked the question, he already knew with confidence what their answer would be. He pulled his shoulders back. He took a deep, steadying breath and looked down at the people.
"Who is the rightful ruler of Mirabel?"
The answer came from a young child, standing closest to the stage.
"Nor Solas,"
the child said. Her mother patted her on the head. Her father smiled. Other voices rang out, one at a time at first, then stronger, filling the room with the sound of the one true name. Valen saw Andy's pilot and the young gunner, Nor's name on their lips, as if it had been there all their lives. The doors behind them opened. Valen heard the crunch of boots on broken glass. Soldiers jerked to stand upright as a hooded figure appeared, hands reaching up to pull the hood back and reveal red lips, dark hair, and eyes as glorious as the setting sun.
"Bow to your queen," Valen said.
The crowd bowed, reverent and ready, as Nor Solas, the queen of Zenterra, the savior of Olin, the new ruler of Mirabel, arrived.
Chapter 89. Nor. Her brother had done his job perfectly. A fine test for his first mission out in the field. She'd been wise to keep him in Lunamere for so long, tortured to near death. It had unlocked his compulsion ability, his true self, his birthright. That was when she had begun to visit him daily in his cell, training him, guiding him, gaining his trust. As Nor entered the building now, her two armies were already waiting, one dressed in the colors of Zenterra, red to match the horrors they would spread across Mirabel to those who rebelled. The other, her new army, adorned in gowns and suits and all manner of fineries that Nor would do away with. Such fine things would be for her people, and hers alone. They all bowed before her, heads tucked close to their chests, breath held as if she were a holy relic. She glided past them without fear, knowing that none would lift a finger to harm her. Valen waited for her on the stage. "Sister," he said. Nor stopped herself from curling her lip at the sight of his figure. Too thin, too angular, too pained. No member of the Solis family deserved such treatment, but it had to be done to ensure that his survival instincts would kick in, to force his powers to unlock. She would reward him later for his loyalty, perhaps with a crown of his own. He was a prince of darkness, her long-lost brother finally come home to her side where he belonged. But never her equal. She would rule alone. "You have done well, Valen," Nor said. "The final step remains," Valen said, inclining his head in thanks. "Should I leave the honor to you?" Nor raised a sculpted brow. "I enjoy watching you work, brother. I can't have all the fun." He smiled at her, a new thing that had begun to pass between them only recently. She enjoyed seeing that smile. He turned back to their new army.
By now, all across Arcadius, a wave would be spreading as time-released explosives full of the silver liquid went off, bringing more to her cause. "Followers of Queen Noor," Valen said, his voice ripe with the new power she had unlocked in him. "We must eliminate the traitors to the crown." He looked specifically to the old leaders of Mirabel. "Kneel before your queen." Their faces were calm as the three leaders knelt before Noor. She reached into her cloak and removed a freshly sharpened knife. Noor had used the whetstone on it herself, then polished the blade to a gleaming perfection. "Your sacrifice is my queen," Valen said as he stepped aside to give Noor space. The words made her warm, light as air. She felt her lips pulling into a beautiful grin as she approached the leaders of the unified systems. One by one, she ran her blade across their throats. Each leader that fell was a gift to her people. "Revenge," her heart sang. And in that moment, Noor knew that her rule had begun.
Chapter 90 Lyra. Lyrana Medi felt reborn. For so long, she had been blinded by darkness, by the lies of the unified systems. For so long, she had been unable to see the light. The moment she rose to her feet, she heard a lingering whisper in her mind. "The true queen," it said. It sounded like Valen, the boy they had not rescued, as she'd previously believed, but stolen away from his queen. She knew Valen belonged at Noor's side, just as much as she knew that the unified systems were her enemy. That her aunt would be a worthy sacrifice to the cause. She looked to Gilly and Breck beside her, knowing they also heard the voice in their own minds. "The true queen," it said again. "Protect her. Honor her. Worship her cause." Lyra's eyes had been opened after all this time. She turned to look at Noor Solis, the true queen of Mirabel. The light had finally begun to shine.
Chapter 91 Dex. The nightmare had not ceased. The system leaders of Mirabel were dead. The queen of a system once thought defeated stood above their bodies, smiling as if she'd conquered the galaxy. Dex had watched her arrive, watched her speak to Valen as if they were kin. He'd seen, with perfect clarity, the way she'd slid her knife across the leaders' throats. Lyra and Gilly and Breck, the crew who had accepted him as one of their own, turned to face the queen as if they belonged to her now. And all Dex could do was hide like a coward behind the bar. He'd managed to sneak back onto the stage and retrieve the general while Valen was distracted. Now he and Andy were on the ground beside him, both bleeding, both dying. A bartending droid, its humanoid torso sprouting from a single wheel, sat silently to Dex's left, awaiting his command. But what command could he give? The droid couldn't save them from their fate, and Dex surely couldn't either. The blood trail outside the bar led straight to them. They'd be discovered soon. Gone was the bravery Dex had always felt as a guardian. Gone was the confidence he'd found as a bounty hunter. Fear had seized Dex in its icy grip, and no matter how hard he tried to break away, the terror surrounding him would not release him. There was nowhere to go, no escape. The madness continued as Noor addressed the crowd, and her soldiers shot the few who still seemed to have control of their minds. Then they began to fan out across the ballroom. The terror intensified with every footstep the soldiers took, every second drawing them closer to discovering Dex's hiding place. "Run," his mind whispered. He could scarcely hear the word over the terror that had dulled his senses and kept him rooted to the spot. Andy lay motionless on the floor beside him, her hand growing colder as Dex gripped it like an anchor. She would not die. She could not die, because if she did, Dex would lose his heart with her. Beside her, the general's eyes were open as he lay on his side, slowly bleeding out. He stared at the wall, lips fluttering with words that Dex couldn't hear. The soldiers were getting closer. Soon they would discover him. Dex gripped Andy's hand tighter, and through his fear, through his hopelessness, a sudden realization emerged. He would stay with her until the end. If it was the last thing he ever did in his life, Dex would die defending Androma Rosella. He wouldn't go down until he knew he'd done everything in his power to save her. The general's mutterings became more insistent. Dex crawled forward, had nearly placed a hand over the general's mouth to silence him, when the words drifted into his ears.
The tunnel.
Dex shook his head. He wanted to scream. He wanted to claw his way out of here, get them to safety. But there was no good ending to this nightmare.
The tunnel!
General Cortaz rasped again. Blood dribbled from his lips, shockingly dark. He lifted a trembling hand and pointed past Dex to the dark shadows beneath the bar top. Dex squinted into the darkness. At first he saw nothing, but as his eyes locked onto a small seam in the wall, something Andy had said drifted into his mind. I remember every little bit, even the hidden escape tunnels that the general installed. He loved to put them in the closets, bathrooms, under the bars. Hope blossomed in his chest as he reached forward and ran his fingers along the seam. It was a small door, just large enough for someone to crawl through. Dex leaned his shoulder up against it, pushed with all of his might. When the door popped open to reveal a dark tunnel beyond, Dex almost wept. Run, his mind said again. He set to work at once, feeling coming back to his limbs, clarity warming his mind. Help me, he whispered to the droid. The blessed thing grabbed the general by the collar and hauled him away like a tray of heavy drinks. By the time the Zentaran soldiers discovered the blood trail behind the bar, Dex, Andy, and the general were already gone. In the docking bay of Avaria, inside the Marauder, Dex ignited the engines and angled the ship toward freedom. He'd never been more grateful for the darkness of the night as he left Arcardius behind.
Chapter 92 Androma. Smoke everywhere. It was in her eyes, curling into her lungs. The transport ship was in flames. The crash had happened so fast. One moment they were soaring through the skies, the next, fire. Pain. A scream tore itself from her throat. Now her ears rang, her heart slammed against her ribs, and fear ripped through her. She had to get out. She couldn't breathe. Help me. Andy turned in her seat. Through the haze, she saw Kaylee's outstretched hand. Her body turned at an awkward angle in the flickering firelight. Her friend was covered in blood. A piece of metal protruded from her stomach like a sword. With each breath Kaylee took, it wobbled. Oh, God, stars! Andy gasped. She reached out, tried to pull the metal from Kaylee's stomach, but the girl screamed, and Andy shrank away, hands trembling, her own vision growing dim. Hang on, Kaylee. Just hang on! Panic seized Andy as she tried to kick open the transport door, but it was stuck. Dented in so far that it trapped her leg against the seat. She couldn't move. Help! Kaylee murmured again. There were tears in her eyes, and a trickle of crimson slipped from her pale lips. I'll get help, Andy said. Just hang on! Shards of glass were embedded into her arms. Her skin was blistering in the heat before her eyes. She began to sob as she slammed the emergency button on the dash, but no light flickered on. Come on! Andy screamed. She slammed the button again and again, but the ship was lifeless around them, and no one was coming to save them. Beside her, Kaylee had fallen silent. She wasn't breathing. Her eyes closed. Her head lulled to the side.
No, Andy said. Kaylee, wake up! Pain tore her chest open. She coughed again, the smoke and the heat unbearable. You have to wake up! She tried to wriggle herself away, but pain exploded from her leg, from her wrists. She was trapped. She knew, suddenly, that she was going to die. The front of the crumpled ship was nearly an inferno now. In seconds, the flames would reach them. Kaylee! Andy said. Please don't do this! Please don't leave me! The girl had stopped moving. Blood trickled from her stomach like a crimson river, slowing now, as if she'd run out.
No, you'll be okay! You'll be okay! Andy sobbed, trying again to pull herself from the seat. Her leg wouldn't move. The door wouldn't free her. Please, she begged. Please, no. Andy had done this to her. Oh, God stars, she'd done this. The crash was her fault. She was Kaylee's specter, sworn to protect her with her life. And now Kaylee was... Andy's head swam as she looked at her charge, the friend who was as close as a sister. Kaylee was dead. Andy sobbed, her entire body trembling as her mind screamed, "You killed her! You killed her! You killed her!" The fires raged, and Andy felt torn from her body as the transport door suddenly groaned and fell away. Cool night air washed in. I'm so sorry, Andy sobbed as she looked at her friend. Kaylee almost looked peaceful, as if she were only sleeping. Andy couldn't leave her. How could she leave her? She had never felt as alone as she did in this very moment. The fire swept into the small space, so close now. The metal shard in Kaylee's stomach had gone straight through her, pinned her body to the seat. Andy couldn't free her, couldn't drag her from her grave. Fear swept over Andy like a poison, caused her to tear herself away from the transport as the flames raged. She crawled away from the inferno, coughing smoke from her lungs, her eyes burning so badly she could scarcely see. She blinked through her tears, fighting the darkness as it threatened to overcome her. This wasn't happening. This wasn't real. Kaylee couldn't be dead. Andy looked back for a final glimpse of her friend. The last thing she saw was Kaylee's eyes, bright blue as the moon, opening wide to stare at her. Alive, Andy's mind screamed. She's alive! Andy reached for the girl, desperate to save her. The transport exploded in a final blast of raging, furious light, catapulting Andy backward. As Kaylee burned, tendrils of black slipped into Andy's mind and stole her away.
Chapter 93. Dex. Dex paced in the med bay of the Marauder, watching the life force drain from the general's eyes. "Tell me what you know!" Dex yelled. The general was a lost cause. Without doctors or med droids, Dex was helpless to save him. The damage Valen had done was too severe. It was a wonder the man had survived this long already. On the table beside General Cortas, Andy was still holding on to life. She was pale, cold, her chest wrapped in bandages that Dex had wound around her himself. He hadn't been trained in medicine or healing. The bartending droid who'd helped him haul the general here wasn't programmed to heal either. But Lon Met could. Dex hadn't been aware of Lyra's plans to move Lon onto the Marauder before the Yucatoria Ball, but he was thanking the God Stars now that the Sentinel was on board. When Dex had shown up with only Andy and the General, both of them dying from their injuries and blood loss, Lon had asked him to choose. Along with his scales, Lon had inherited something else from his radiation-affected ancestors. He was a universal donor. "I can't save them both," he'd said. "I only have so much blood to give." When Dex chose Andy, Lon had accepted his decision without question. He helped